Hi, Namulanta Kombo here with some exciting news. My award-winning podcast, Dear Daughter, is back for a second season. We're bringing you more moving personal stories and more letters of advice from people all around the world for daughters everywhere. That's Dear Daughter from the BBC World Service. Find it wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
There were a lot of challenges I was confronted with. My bid to acquiring funding from all bodies failed me.
Around the world, 1.4 billion people lack access to formal financial services, two-thirds of which are in low and middle-income countries.
Ghana is run by SMEs, and therefore being able to help those people and bring them formally into banking can significantly accelerate development in Ghana.
For women, bank accounts can enable financial independence and strengthen economic empowerment.
When a woman has an account, the household increases their spending on education, healthcare, nutritious food.
I'm Sam Fenwick, and today on Business Daily from the BBC World Service, we're looking at how more people can access banking facilities. The bustling streets of Ghana's capital, Accra. It's where Oscar Bilai Okudo runs his business.
The product I manufacture is cassava. So what basically we do is we procure cassava from the farm gates, we mill it into powder, then we package it neatly to take advantage of the bigger markets here in Ghana and abroad.
Cassava is a root vegetable. It's similar in shape and size to a sweet potato and has a brownish skin. It's the most important root crop in Ghana. More than 70% of small-scale Ghanaian farmers grow cassava, and it contributes about 22% of agricultural GDP. Cassava flour is produced by grating the vegetable, drying it out, and then grinding it into a fine powder. Oscar started his business 7 years ago after completing national service. He says that he saw an opportunity when he returned home to his village in the Oti region.
There in my village, cassava was very common to get. So mostly when you step down at the market, it's sold on plates and those places are not hygienic enough. And most people always shy away from acquiring or buying from that places. So what I did was to hygienically process this and package it to meet a particular standard that people would always be proud to buy.
And what do you use it for?
Apart from its usage as a delicacy in cooking, it's also used in baking.
Oscar used his savings to start the business. But when it came to expand, he struggled to get credit. He says he wants to buy machinery to mill the cassava, but he can't afford them. Instead, he employs people to do the work manually.
There were a lot of challenges I was confronted with. That was purely financing. So I had migrated my productions into processing. There were a lot of things I needed to get in place. I needed funds to acquire some equipment and those things. So it happened that my bid to acquiring funding from all bodies failed me. So what I decided to do is, whilst we're working on the funding in order to scale it up, we resorted to other means. So I started manually and I got 5 team guys to work with me. I pay them when I need them. After their service is delivered, I just pay them.
So in order to grow your business, have you been to the bank to try and get some credit facilities?
Yes, it did. It did. I tried and it did fail me.
When you go to the bank and ask for credit or a loan or an overdraft or something, what do they say to you?
Frankly, it's quite difficult as an SME to access funding from lenders, or so to call it, banks over here. They actually attribute these reasons of rejection to a lot of factors. And one of those reasons they gave was that why they are reluctant to lend out. Basically, it's because of the risk factor. And what they have introduced to mitigate this risk factor is a reduction in the amount of loan requested. In case they lose it, it should not be substantial enough to bring them down. And 2, the collateral. And these collateral are like the lands, the cars. And trust me, it's not every SME. How many of them can even talk of land and not to talk of a car?
So you don't have the collateral?
No. The collateral has been a challenge over here. The collateral has been a very great challenge.
And Oscar's situation isn't an isolated case. Getting access to banking facilities in Ghana is really difficult. According to data analysis firm Statista, the rate of bank account ownership in the country is falling. Last year, 42.3% of the population aged over 15 had a bank account. In 2021, that figure was around 58%. Kobla Nalate is the Managing Director of Retail and Business Banking at Absa Bank. It's one of the largest in Ghana. And he explains why, in some areas, the risks are just too high for banks to do business.
The fact is that, you know, businesses go to areas where they see economic and commercial potential. So, for example, if you take a look at Ghana, Ghana today has 16 regions, right? But you can see that the economic opportunity is visible in certain areas. And in certain areas, you will struggle to see that. Similarly, if you look at certain sectors of the economy, you will see banks showing preference. A classic example is that access to funding and banking by businesses in the agri chain has been low because agribusiness is probably one of the riskiest. And therefore, to address the gaps in terms of access to banking for such disadvantaged regions of Ghana and such disadvantaged sectors of the economy will take active collaboration between various stakeholders, be it the banks, you know, the central bank, and other development organizations that may have to bring finance and access to banking services to such regions and to such disadvantaged sectors of the economy.
So it's a vicious circle. Banks won't lend, businesses can't grow, and neither can the country's economy.
My name is Florence Japon. My company's name is Florama Enterprise. I deal in chemicals. Chemicals for making soap, shower gels, air conditioning and skin products.
At the end of last year, Absa Bank partnered with the charity the MasterCard Foundation to try and improve access to credit for small businesses. 2.5 million Ghanaian cedi, about $210,000, was made available to young entrepreneurs. This film is promoting the scheme.
And it really helped me. I want to move out from the market and move to a shopping mall so that I would sell at the down floor of the shopping mall.
Here's Absa Bank's Managing Director of Retail and Business Banking, Kobla Nalate.
Through this partnership, we are seeking to directly influence the creation of 50,000 jobs across Ghana by the end of 2025. And our partners, the MasterCard Foundation, is helping us co-share the risk of lending to agribusinesses and lending to businesses run by the youth and women. The second way they are helping is to provide us with grants to be able to undertake training for the vast number of SMEs. We have found out that access to knowledge, to information, is quite deficient in a lot of our businesses. And through this partnership, so for example, so far we have trained in excess of 2,000 such SMEs to date. The final way they are supporting us is by directly giving grants to startups who are not at the stage to secure commercial credit, right? These are small businesses just started. Some of them are yet to really test the ideas. And it's helpful that these businesses have some free money to really test the ideas and then be able to push them to the stage of commercialization. So those are three specific ways that we are working collaboratively with the MasterCard Foundation to really push our agenda of bringing banking to micro and small businesses in Ghana.
The World Bank has made increasing access to financial services one of their priorities to aid global development. It says having a bank account makes it easier for households to invest in health and education and manage emergencies which can push them into poverty. Access to digital financial services can also help empower women and narrow the gender gap.
Having an account gives a woman greater privacy, security, and control over her own money, which gives her more of a say in how the household uses its resources.
Leora Clapper is the lead economist in the Development Research Group at the World Bank. She's carried out research into how women can benefit from having bank accounts.
So people who don't have access to a financial account must make their payments, save, store their money, mostly in cash. But cash is tricky. It's easy to lose. If you don't have a bank account, you might keep your cash savings under your mattress, but that makes it easier for a family member to borrow or steal. In contrast, accounts provide more control over your money and your financial life. And so that increased control can have a multiplying effect on the value people get from their money. And quite importantly, research also shows that when a woman gets an account, she can build savings, spend more on her children's education, and invest in business opportunities. There's rigorous academic research showing that when a woman has an account, the household increases their spending on education, healthcare, nutritious food. There's a study in the Philippines that shows when a woman gets an account, the household is more likely to buy a washing machine or goods that matter more for women. So the woman literally gets a more comfortable seat at the table on how the household budget is spent. Financial inclusion has been shown to achieve other development goals. So, for example, an experiment that provided digital saving accounts to Kenyan households boosted high school enrollment by about 6%, a third higher than those without access to accounts. And my research on mostly female factory workers in Bangladesh who were paid directly into an account found that they were more likely to save and less likely to make impulse purchases than account owners who didn't receive electronic wage payments. And the digital wage recipients were also better able to manage health emergencies and other unexpected expenses. And many of them started out with very limited financial literacy. But over time, they became better at using financial services without help and avoiding extra agent fees. And so in other words, they became savvier financial customers.
Many of us used digital payments for the first time during the COVID-19 pandemic. Whether it was to order groceries, which were delivered to our doorsteps, or to pay bills online. A third of adults in developing countries who paid utility bills directly from an account did so for the first time after the start of the pandemic. And there were more people receiving digital payments into their accounts as governments digitised COVID-19 support payments. All this transactional data is building a digital financial profile of hundreds of thousands of people. And while traditional banks may be reluctant to accept that data to predict whether, for example, someone could afford to repay a loan or not, fintech companies and other financial organisations are. Here's Richard Shearer, the CEO of a company called Tintra.
We're building emerging market financial infrastructure to empower people in the emerging world to be able to execute on their own vision. Someone in Nigeria that wants to start a fintech, a farmer in Ghana, a small businessman in Vietnam, they have the local knowledge. It's a lived experience for them. It would be have elements of neocolonialism for us to think that we could do it better. What we're doing, we're building the infrastructure to empower them, to build it in a way that reduces friction, reduces cost, and allows them to execute on their vision, which is doing good in their communities, which is allowing the unbanked to become banked, to allow the underbanked to have banking facilities that mean something to them. It's not peering at this through a Western lens. It's actually understanding, how does a Tanzanian business assess the risk of a good Tanzanian versus a bad Tanzanian? And actually doing that cultural work to truly understand how that risk profile works, what the challenges are, what the regulation is saying, and what the common practice is, and why they are different, and how we can navigate that divide.
So you're reducing the risk by understanding the consumer better.
That's perfectly put. Cost is the price of risk. Now, where it comes to emerging market finance, the risk is much more perceived than it is real. Now, of course, in a developing economy, there is more risk than there is in a developed economy, in a highly regulated economy like the UK or the US. But a large proportion of the friction and the extra cost is in ignorance, not in true risk.
And there are business people and entrepreneurs in low and middle income countries hoping to use this kind of tech to help people get bank accounts.
Yeah, hi, Sam. My name is Shingi Munyeza. I'm an entrepreneur in Southern Africa, based out of Zimbabwe. I have businesses in the energy sector, I've also businesses in the fintech sector, e-commerce. I've operated in these markets in Southern Africa for the past 28 years.
Shingi Munyeza is working with Richard Shearer to try and bring banking facilities to people in Zimbabwe.
We are predominantly an informal sector-driven economy, which means that certain institutional processes are not part of a normal business transaction, which means you cannot track transaction, you cannot track credibility, you cannot also ascertain historical performance, which means if you want to get credit, you'll not be able to assess that. It's also a highly cash environment. So much of the trading is done outside the banking sector. What we are trying to do now is to find a banking solution that captures that informal sector to formalize their trade and then be mainstreamed into the normal and formalized financial services sector.
And you can do that from the bottom up, can you, do you think? Or does that not need some government intervention?
Yeah, you can do that. That's where technology comes in. Often technology goes ahead, in most cases, ahead of policy. And then they end up coming up with a policy to make sure that there is proper governance around that disruption.
And are people ready for this?
Well, remember, technology, when it disrupts, it has nothing to say that are people ready. People leapfrog into technology. So it's not like you have to educate people that in the next 3 years, there's this thing that's going to come. Are you ready? No. Technology by its nature is disruptive and people adopt and adapt.
And who do you think your customers will be?
Everyone. Everyone who is unbankable.
Well, that's quite a lot of people in Zimbabwe.
Correct. That's why we need to bring that in.
Zimbabwean entrepreneur Shingi Munyeza talking to me, Sam Fenwick, about how more people can access banking services. But for the final word in this edition of Business Daily from the BBC World Service, let's go back to Ghana to hear from Oscar Bilai Unkudo, who's building a company selling cassava flour.
My community is a farming community, and most of them are actually living under a $1 daily basis. And it's kind of disheartening. These are hardworking people, and they are struggling. To get a 3 square meal a day has become a challenge for them. So I want to grow my company to reach a stage I'm able to employ not less than 100 employees so that at the end of the day, I'll end up reducing the unemployment rate of this country.